Welcome to another AHE podcast, where today I want to talk about HMRC's construction industry scheme, which has now been operating for 3.5 years following its launch on Good Friday, 6th of April 2007. In the time available for a podcast, I can only give you an insight into the issues, particularly the problems that AAT members and others have been raising with me. But I invite you to book on the CPD master courses that I will be presenting in Southampton on the 23rd of October and in Ipswich on the 29th of November. HMRC's construction industry scheme is first and foremost a tax deduction scheme, and such a scheme has existed in three different formats since the early 1970s. The need for a tax deduction scheme is quite clear, because the industry attracts a lot of self-employed workers, and many of these come from overseas, which increases the risk of non-payment of UK taxes. That risk is minimised by having a tax deduction scheme. Times have changed from the early 1970s, when the overseas workers mainly came from Ireland, whereas today we have an influx of foreign workers, particularly from the expanded European Union. However, I must get over the point to AAT members that the scheme is not just for the workers, the men, and that it does apply to businesses of all sizes. On this day that I'm talking to you, I am advising a number of different clients on how to deal with the failure to make CIS deductions from businesses that are not sole traders or two-man partnerships. As I have already said, this tax deduction scheme is not just about making tax deductions from individual workers. The first two construction industry schemes lasted for about 7 years, which seems to suggest that the current scheme is about halfway through its shelf life. But personally, I cannot see any major change in the near future, except for the tax and national insurance contribution treatment of labour-only subcontractors. That is something I will touch on later in this podcast. One less than major, but nevertheless important change that is expected to take place next October is the introduction of a new penalty regime for the construction industry scheme. That is a very necessary change because the current regime is so often disproportionate to the offences that occur. Large fixed penalties can and are currently being imposed under the existing CIS legislation, often where there is no tax lost, or the amount of tax lost is relatively small. Too often, AAT members are finding when their clients provide the papers for them to prepare income tax returns and or accounts that the client has not operated the CIS scheme at all or correctly. The autumn CPD master courses will look at these problems and how to operate the scheme correctly in much more depth than I can cover in this podcast. But let me give you an insight into the makeup and operation of the scheme and the current issues that are causing problems for AAT members. Section 2. What businesses are caught by the scheme? The scheme requires that any business that comes within the definition of a contractor should make a deduction of tax when making a payment to any person, whether be individual or business, that falls within the definition of a subcontractor, but only when the work falls within the definition of what is known as construction operations. CIS regulations do provide for gross payment without any tax deduction where the subcontractor business has satisfied an HMRC officer that gross payment status should be granted. A contractor is the person making the payment for construction work and is defined as any person carrying on a business which includes construction operations. An AAT member might easily find that a subcontractor client has become a contractor because of paying another subcontractor to do some work on a job. For example, a carpenter paying an electrician to do some electrical work. The client could unknowingly find himself in deep trouble with HMRC because of the failure to register as a contractor. Then, having failed to register, the contractor will not have verified the tax payment status of the other subcontractor, such as the electrician in my example. On top of that, there is likely to be a failure to deduct construction industry scheme tax from the payments made to that subcontractor, and then failing to submit monthly CIS returns to report those payments and deductions. Yes, contractors are often limited companies, but a contractor could also be a partnership or a sole trader, and might also be a joint venture company involving perhaps two construction businesses, or maybe a construction business and someone providing the finance for the project. The contractor could be another business, such as a property developer, who engages a subcontractor to do the work, and the issue might then be whether or not that property developer is aware of the responsibilities for operating the construction industry scheme. I have seen too many cases where the subcontractor has gladly accepted gross payment, despite being a business registered for payment and a deduction at the standard rate, leaving the poor property developer in difficulty when HMRC discovers the failure to operate the scheme. Ignorance will not be accepted as a reasonable excuse. Ordinary householders, having work done on their own property, perhaps decoration, repairs, or even an extension, are not contractors within the construction industry scheme when making payments to a builder or a craftsman. They do not have to operate the scheme and do not have to make any deductions from the payments to the builder or workers. However, when the builder or the craftsman engages the assistance of other self-employed workers to complete the job, such as my electrician example, that subcontractor becomes a contractor making payments for construction operations, and those self-employed workers are subcontractors to whom the construction industry scheme applies. They therefore have to be verified, and where relevant, 20% deductions have to be made. Some businesses deal with this potential problem by arranging for the householder to pay the worker for fitting a wooden floor or for fitting a kitchen, billing them separately to the bill for the wood flooring or the kitchen units. The payment by that householder to the craftsman is outside the scope of the scheme, whereas the payment by the builder to the craftsman is within the scheme. Section 3, Contractor and Subcontractor Registration. Contractors must register with HMRC to operate the construction industry scheme if they come within the scope of the scheme, and any failure to register will result in penalties being charged. A contractor reference number will be required to register for the scheme. New contractors must register with HMRC before engaging the first subcontractor. It is not optional. Registration is required for new businesses and also for businesses that change, including where a sole trader forms a partnership or a sole trader or partnership changes to a limited company. An existing business might form a joint venture with another business, but the joint venture will also have to register, notwithstanding that the one business might already be registered. The new businesses have to register, and we are seeing problems where businesses are not appreciating this. Contractors can register as a new employer by email through the HMRC's website on www.hmrc.gov.uk/CIS/contractors/reg-OBS. It's easy to find on the Revenues website. Alternatively, you can call HMRC's new employer helpline on 0845 607 0143. That helpline is open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday to Friday and from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. If you're involved with a non-UK resident business or subcontractor, they should contact HMRC's Centre for Non-Residents, and their telephone number is 044 151 210-222. The information that a contractor will need to register is, first of all, the unique taxpayer reference, the UTR, of the business. A national insurance number will be required for a sole trader, for individual partners or directors. HMRC will also need to know the registered business name, and they will require contact details. We then have to tick the box to confirm engagement of construction industry subcontractors. HMRC confirms that online form email submission is secure, and HMRC will set up a contractor scheme and a pay-as-you-earn scheme if requested, and then HMRC will send a contractor pack with all the information needed. A pay-as-you-earn scheme is normally needed even if there are no directors' fees or employees in order for the scheme to be dealt with online. Unlike contractor registration, which is compulsory, registration as a subcontractor is voluntary. But of course, contractors will have to deduct 30% from payments made to any subcontractor that has not registered. New subcontractors should therefore register before starting work in the construction industry, or 30% deductions will be made by the contractor. If the subcontractor client is already registered for self-assessment, they, or you on their behalf, can register by calling HMRC's CIS helpline on 0845 366 7899, choosing option 3. The information we will need to register the new subcontractor is again the unique tax reference number, the UTR, a national insurance number for a sole trader or individual partner or a director, again the business name, and we can give up to one trading name. If the subcontractor needs a national insurance number to register, we can contact the Department for Work and Pensions on 0845 600 0643. An evidence of identity interview will be needed, and the subcontractor will have to go to a Job Centre Plus office. We should remember that HMRC requires a national insurance number before issuing a unique tax reference number. Regulation 25 sets out the documents, records and information that an officer of the board may require to establish the identity of the subcontractor. These include a birth certificate, name, address, national insurance number and unique tax reference number, utility bills, council tax bills, current passport, driving license, a company registration number for a company, and a company's memorandum and articles of association. All that information should be obtained in advance of seeking to register, and there have been difficulties, particularly with new companies sometimes, in obtaining a unique tax reference number. If a subcontractor wants to apply for gross payment status to avoid having tax deductions from the payments received from a contractor, there are three tests to be satisfied to qualify for gross payment status. The business test is about carrying out construction work or providing labour for construction work in the UK, and the business is required to be run largely through a bank account. The turnover test involves ignoring VAT and materials, and the construction turnover must be at least £30,000 for a sole trader, or £30,000 each for a partner in a partnership, or £30,000 each for a director in a limited company. There is an alternative turnover test of £200,000 for a partnership or a limited company. The final test, and the one that causes much difficulty, is the compliance test, where HMRC looks at the level of compliance of the business in the previous 12 months. Here we're talking about compliance by the business and its proprietors, its partners or its directors. The requirement to complete and have returned all required tax returns, not just the business tax returns. to have supplied any tax information requested by HMRC, and very importantly, and the one that probably causes most problems, to have paid any taxes due by the due dates. That is all the tax due from the subcontractor and the business. Any national insurance contributions due from the subcontractor, any pay-as-you-earn income tax, and national insurance contributions due as an employer, and any deductions due from the subcontractor as a contractor. HMRC will ignore some failures in that 12-month period of review. To begin with, three late CIS 300 monthly returns, which are up to 28 days late, would be ignored. But one return that's more than 28 days late will cause a failure. Three late payments of CIS deductions or pay-as-you-earn up to only 14 days late would be ignored. So any payment made more than 14 days late would cause a failure. One late payment of self-assessment tax up to 28 days late would be ignored. Any employer's end-of-year return made late. Any late payment of corporation tax up to 28 days late. Any self-assessment return made late. Any payment not made by the due date where it is less than £100. The compliance test is an ongoing issue for our clients and our employers if we work in the construction industry. Because once gross payment status is achieved, it is something that we should wish to protect. HMRC automatically checks the compliance status of every gross payment registered subcontractor at least once a year through an automatic computerized system, the Tax Treatment Qualification Test. If HMRC issues a notice of refusal of gross payment for someone applying for the first time, or a notice of removal of gross payment, we have decision time. We have to consider with our clients whether we should appeal or accept the decision. If we appeal and lose the appeal, then there will be a 12-month delay before being able to reapply. Obviously, if HMRC is wrong, and we must consider the reasons for the decision to refuse an application or to remove gross payment status, we should challenge that decision. But if we know that the stated failures are correct, we then have to consider arguments for reasonable excuse, such as problems in making late payments because of problems in getting paid. We also have to consider how to deal with any potential problems the subcontractor may have with his contractor customers. Those sort of things need to be discussed with our clients before making a decision on appeals. Section 4, engaging subcontractors. The employment status of subcontract workers is a topic that could take up much more time than I have for this podcast, but it cannot be ignored. HMRC is becoming more active in looking at construction industry scheme businesses, and the employment status of any workers paid outside of payroll is bound to be considered at any HMRC, PAYE or CIS inspection. HMRC guidance is quite clear, and contractors are told at the outset that they must first determine if the worker is genuinely self-employed under the terms of the contract that he is to be engaged under before deciding whether they come within the construction industry scheme. This is because the scheme does not apply to employees. Pay-as-you-earn should be operated and Class 1 NICs deducted for any workers who are employees. Contractors may be asked to prove that the employment status of any individual or group of workers was checked when they were first engaged. Therefore, my advice is that we should consider using HMRC's employment status indicator tool for this purpose. HMRC now tells us that ESI, the employment status indicator tool, which is an online tool, will give a definitive answer. We really must test the status of new subcontractors and also retain details of the answer we are given. If it gives us the wrong answer, in other words, it says employment, we need to consider whether pay-as-you-earn should be applied. Or if we dispute that decision, we need to consider whether we should approach HMRC for an agreement on the employment status of that worker or group of workers. I have been able to agree with HMRC officers that self-employment has applied even where the test has said employment. The potential cost of getting this wrong is a great concern. HMRC will seek to recover the Class 1 national insurance contributions not made and the income tax under-deducted. Indeed, many clients may receive a shock if they think by deducting 20% from the payments to the subcontractors, there would be no tax liability. How much of that tax will have been repaid to the subcontractor? How much tax is actually available for set off? HMRC's Employment Status Indicator tool will address the main issues of control, financial risk, and substitution. And using it will at least give you an idea of what you're likely to be up against if HMRC comes calling on your company or your client. However, I will never leave it at that. I will always look at the subcontractor payments records to see how regular and frequent are the payments made to individual workers. We can be sure that HMRC will be doing that via the monthly CIS returns, and they will be armed with that knowledge when they come calling. You have been warned. Section 5. CIS penalties. I have already expressed concerns about the level of penalties that can be imposed by HMRC and how very often these are disproportionate to the offences committed. So let me remind you what penalties exist at the moment. There is a fixed penalty of £100 per month charged for each 50 subcontractors or part batch of 50 subcontractors, which means that a contractor with only a small number of subcontractors will be charged £100 a month for failing to submit a return on time. The penalties increase to £200 per month for 51 subcontractors up to 100, and they continue to increase for each 50 subcontractors. The penalties are charged for any failure to file a return within 14 days of the end of the month. That means the 19th of the month deadline. And this deadline is not extended to the 22nd for contractors that submit their returns electronically. The fixed penalties are charged for up to 12 months for each return that remains outstanding for that length of time. And where a return is outstanding for more than 12 months, an additional automatic final late filing penalty will also be charged. This is an amount not exceeding £3,000 and is based on the number of offences within the 12-month period prior to submission of the late return. If a contractor submits a monthly return that is incomplete or incorrect, HMRC may charge penalties not exceeding the difference between the amount returned and the amount that should have been returned. And incomplete or incorrect returns include persons or payments omitted from the return, persons or payments incorrectly entered onto the return, and there we have the situation of employees who shouldn't be on the return, failing to make a declaration in respect of verification or employment status also incurs penalties, incorrectly making a declaration in respect of verification or employment status also puts us into a penalty position. If a contractor fails to produce records relating to payments made under the scheme when asked to do so, penalties of up to £3,000 may be charged. Contractors may be charged an initial penalty not exceeding £300 and daily penalties not exceeding £60 per day if they fail to give statements to subcontractors registered for payment under deduction, and then a penalty not exceeding £3,000 if negligently or deliberately providing incorrect information in such statements. Payment status are a real issue for our clients. Contractor clients must provide statements to subcontractors paid under deduction. too many are not doing that. It is an offence for a subcontractor knowingly to make a false declaration or submit any false documentation in order to register for gross payment or for payment under deduction. The penalty for that offence could be up to £3,000. The warning is this, that these penalties are very significant and they arise even where there is no tax involved, as would be the case with any failure to submit nil returns. Some relief may be obtained from disproportionate fixed penalties, but there is no clear guidance on this, and we should try to help clients avoid any failure to register, any failure to verify, failures to make deductions, and failures to submit CIS 300 monthly returns. We will also need to give serious consideration to make involuntary disclosures to HMRC to avoid or at least mitigate penalties when such failures come to light. Finally, summary. This podcast has only touched on some, but not all of the key issues for the current scheme, and I would again like to recommend that AAT members who are able to attend the two CPD courses in Southampton or Ipswich consider coming along. I will have much more time to go through the operation of the scheme, how to get it right, and how to deal with such difficult issues as clients who have failed to register and make deductions, including making voluntary disclosures to HMRC. I will also be able to answer any questions that you have. Employment status will also be on the agenda, and I will look at the use of HMRC's employment status indicator tool and what to do when it gives you the wrong answer. I will also look at the type of work that comes within the scheme as a construction operation and what work is outside the scope of the scheme, absolving our clients of the need to operate CIS, to make tax deductions and to submit monthly returns. Thank you for listening to this podcast. I hope it will have helped you at least in some way. Goodbye.